You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 23 August. We had Japanese July inflation data earlier this morning, 2.8%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Martin Ackerman, he's chief economist at Citadel. Really good CPI data earlier this week. Rate cuts are locking for September. We'll talk around that. We'll talk around the Federal Reserve. They have a rate decision a day ahead of us next month. Zane Wilson from Old Mutual Investment Group and sustainable U.S. and Chinese government debt. What can they do and how can investors respond? Thoughts from me on it being a bull market. Don't be afraid. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. End in sight for multi-million rand damages claim against Spur. Global GPS Food Group alleges it concluded an oral agreement with Spur Corporation to develop and manage a rib processing facility in Cape Town. Don't mess with Spur ribs. Business day, Toyota SA boosts local manufacturing with 1.1 billion rand investment. The JV and KZN will boost parts manufacturing and create about 250 jobs. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.9%, NASDAQ 1.7% lower. East mostly red, Sydney's up 0.4%, but everything else down. Tokyo a quarter of a percent, Hong Kong a third of a percent, and Tencent down 0.3%. Commodities mostly red. Gold 2,528, Brent 7,708 is the green, platinum 9.57 and palladium 9.20. Rand is 17.99, Bitcoin 60,600. Top 40 opening call 150 points to the green, 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting now with Martin Ackerman, chief economist at Citadel. Martin, appreciate the early morning time. That Wednesday CPI number, local inflation, 4.6%, well within the band of 3 to 6. Of course, the governor always talks around the 4.5. The point is, I mean, we are literally a whisker away. It was a good CPI print for rate cuts in the MPC meeting next month.
Yes, Simon, I agree. You know, we're very close to that 4.5 they're looking for. In fact, if you look at core inflation, if we strip out fuel and food, we're sitting at 4.3%. So I think the inflation data is really paving the way for them to consider that first rate cut. You know, there's a chance that he wants to get inflation a little bit lower even, you know, for any upside surprise. But at the moment, if you look at the strength in the currency, you know, the rand is definitely telling us that at least for the next 6 to 8 months, that's not going to cause additional inflation. So, yeah, a good number altogether. And I think, we're looking forward in terms of the rate decision later on.
Yeah, and I take your point about the rand, and of course oil as well, also sort of behaving in a sense. The governor always talks around, you know, the risk to inflation is to the upside, and you mentioned there a surprise to inflation moving higher. My sense, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this, surely risks to inflation is usually more to the upside than the downside, or could inflation suddenly sort of collapse lower?
Yeah, so you can definitely get strong disinflation forces. And that's the other side of the problem with, in fact, that's more difficult for central banks to manage, because how do you actually get, inflation to go up if you only got one tool, and that's interest rates? So we know that if we've got high inflation, you hike rates, you basically put a lid on demand, and then in time inflation comes down. A different story altogether if you're sitting with disinflation or even deflation. Now, the best example there is if you go back to Europe a couple of years ago, when they had deflation, interest rates at, well, basically negative, trying to incentivize consumers to spend. So, yeah, I think the Reserve Bank governor is very much worried about some upside surprise. And that's partly why, you know, they haven't, because I think, you know, they were in a position to already cut. But they're very careful to start doing that before the U.S. Because if we do cut before the U.S., then we take away a little bit of that yield sweetener. Mm-hmm. The rand can take a bit of a knock. And that might then just surprise inflation, you know, 12, 18 months down the line. So that's why I also think, you know, if we turn to the U.S. and the inflation data that came out there, also very solid, moving in the right direction. Currently, the central governments are altogether at the Jacks and all get together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, the US is probably going to give us that first cut. And then with our inflation print now, that definitely opens the door for our Reserve Bank to cut the following day.
Yeah, and it's the following day. Of course, the FOMC announces 18 September. We're 19 September. The US, I mean, you mentioned that. I mean, it looks, certainly the market thinks they're going to cut. The debate has almost moved to whether it should be a quarter or a half a percent in the US. Do central bankers sort of start cautiously? Because you can always accelerate at a later stage. Or might we see the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell sort of come more aggressively at a half a percent cut?
No, I think our view is they're probably going to stay with 25 bips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you suddenly go with 50 bips, which is not the normal kind of speed, if you can put it that way, then the markets might just say, but what's going on here? Did they wait too late? Do you think they've missed the boat? So I think to keep stability, probably start with a 25. If need be, then later on, definitely we can see bigger rate cuts. But it's very unlikely that they will start this time around with 50 bips already. We know they can do that. They've done it before, especially there's a crisis developing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not in that kind of environment. So I think 25 bips is the way to go.
In many senses, and if we take the Federal Reserve as sort of like the central banker of note, and I'm not in any way dismissing our local MPC or the Europeans or the English or anybody else, but really the US is the global economy. My sense is they've managed this really well. We had the highest inflation in 40 years. US inflation got above 9%. Heck, I think UK got above 11% if memory serves. And they've kind of managed this well, actually.
Yeah, I'll say. So they said from the start they're going to engineer a soft landing.
Mm.
At the time, the market said, well, you know, be careful what you wish for. It's not that easy to engineer these kind of soft landings, however you want to define that. But I agree. I think, you know, this being a very normal economic cycle where we had inflation from a couple of shocks, the adjusted monetary policy, fortunately, we had leeway to do that, and inflation started to behave. No crisis like the financial crisis, touch wood yet,
mm-hmm.
Or something like COVID. So that aside, you know, anything that breaks in the system as a result of high interest rates, unemployment in the US is starting to look a little bit on the bad side, but they're probably going to start cutting proactively. And I do think, all credit to them, that they are probably going to get this economy to slow very orderly in terms of getting it where they want it to be.
Yeah, orderly. And I mean, it's not an easy thing to do by any stretch. A last question. Maybe our MPC misses September, but let's assume that they do pick, that we get an FOMC cut and then ourselves a day later. I mean, what would your expectation be in the initial part of the cycle? A full percent over the next year? Maybe another percent and a percent and a half? Or am I being overly optimistic?
Yeah, again, the governor is very clear that they don't focus on the currency and, you know, they're independent, so they don't look at the US. That is true, but the reality is, like I've said, you know, there's a reality of a yield pickup that supports the rand one way or the other. So they are, you know, taking a look at what the Fed is doing. So the Fed is cutting in an orderly fashion. Mm-hmm. Again, depending on our data, you know, I don't think it will be too aggressive. So the market is thinking about 4 on the US side. We're pretty much in the same line for 4 cuts. They talk about 1% over the course of the next year. Interestingly enough, Namibia cut their rates, I think it was last week. They couldn't wait any longer because they normally also, you know, in step with us. So that just shows you our Reserve Bank governor is very much in tune with the view that's coming from the US.
Yeah, in Namibia, I was looking at the data. Pretty much moves in lockstep with us. This time they were like, "Nah, fam, we can't wait anymore." Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist, Citadel. Always appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today: LinkedIn and Twitter. Will the MPC cut next month? I mean, or is it another hold? Please, not another hold. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. When you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the unpredictable ups and downs caused by day-to-day market fluctuations. because our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Zane Wilson, co-portfolio manager of the Old Mutual Maximum Return Fund from Old Mutual Investment Group. Zane, appreciate the time today. US and Chinese debt. US is very much government debt. Chinese perhaps sits more at the bank level. Lots of concerns around both of them. What sort of numbers are we talking? I mean, the US number, I keep on hearing, around what, $35 trillion US dollars?
Yeah, Simon, thanks for having me. So let's do the US debt first. The US debt's about $34 trillion on the government side. But obviously, the relevant thing to look at is what is that as a percentage of GDP and where has it been in the past? It's about 120% of GDP right now. We haven't been here before. If you take out intergovernment debt, it's closer to 100. And the last time we were here was the 1940s. And then on China's side, you know, understanding where the debt actually sits is quite tricky. But excluding the bank debt, the state debt, and if you including state debt, federal government debt, local government debt, and then also these kind of SPVs that China uses for their infrastructure development, which are effectively government backed, that's also close to 100%. And we haven't really been there before in China either.
I mean, the numbers are absolutely significant. How does the US respond to this debt pile? I mean, I can't imagine they default. I suppose they could print money. They could raise taxes as an option to pay for it. They could maybe cap rates. What is a possible solution for them? This can't get kicked down the road forever, surely.
So we've done an analysis looking at, you know, when does debt typically matter? And by matter, I mean, when do policymakers start paying attention to it, and when do they start looking at what are the potential levers to pull? And we're broadly at that point in the US now because the debt level is high enough, but probably more importantly, the debt service burden is high enough as well. So you're starting to get a squeeze on kind of non-interest expenditure and on the kind of federal and state level.
Yeah.
As you've laid out, the options are raise revenues through taxes, kind of try and generate some inflation and growth, rig the interest rates, and cut expenditure. And what policymakers typically do is it depends on the environment that leads into kind of the debt problem, and that kind of shapes what are the potential levers to pull. So I'll give you an example. If inequality is particularly high, taxes are particularly low, and government is prioritizing, I don't know, infrastructure and kind of competing with foreign competitors, and then what you typically tend to see is higher taxes, more redistribution to kind of low income cohorts, and you don't see expenditure cuts. I think that's more the kind of environment we're in now, where you have bipartisan support for, you know, an infrastructure drive and CHIPS Act and kind of reshoring manufacturing, so that the impetus to spend is bipartisan between Republicans and Democrats, and you have high levels of inequality. So those kind of rising expenditures are to deal with Social Security and Medicare kind of costs. The risk is we're more likely to get an environment where you have incremental increases in taxes. Or further down the road, if that happens very slowly because you're swinging between Democratic and Republican governments, I think the risk of going back to a world where we have capped interest rates is pretty high.
Yeah, it sounds crazy when you say it, but, you know, when options are limited, perhaps that's just China, perhaps more difficult. And of course, China has a more direct, perhaps, response to South Africa in that they consume commodities and we need them to be booming to use the commodities that we produce, but also a command economy. So maybe a little more manageable, perhaps, or maybe I'm being overly optimistic for China.
I'm not sure if it's more manageable, because part of the reason why we've got here is the kind of command economy construct. If you're setting out objectives for, you know, we need to build this number of highways, we need to build this number of homes, and that is what is being pushed down to local governments, the return and like profit optimization of those targets for local government doesn't matter as much. It's all about build, 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 and not about is this build being done effectively and is the return on that kind of build good. So we've landed where we are in China because of poor quality of investment, because of the command control kind of economy. So part of what they have to do, and they're starting to show signs of change in direction, is to focus more on the quality of the investment and the management of their kind of SOEs and local governments, and have a more of a return focus. So, you know, that investment that you're kind of debt funding is actually cash generative, which is the problem they've had before, is you know, that drove the growth, but actually you weren't producing returns. And that's why we've landed where we are in China.
Gotcha. And I take your point on the command economy is actually the problem that has largely created it. In a recent note you put out, you say, okay, we've set up, we've got these two massive debt issues. There's ways they can be resolved in the meantime where we're investing. The one obviously is gold. I mean, I've chatted with lots of folks around gold. I've chatted with World Gold Council. We're certainly seeing central banks buying of gold. We see it trading up around 2,500 all-time highs. I mean, gold is the classic sort of response in this case.
Yeah, I think so. You need to think about what are you replacing and what kind of characteristics of the investment you're replacing. What do you want to get? Because we're concerned about the US Treasury debt, it's how do we find alternative diversifiers in our portfolio that do the things that we want when you have, I don't know, slowdowns in growth. And the typical ones you'll have there are gold, yen, franc, maybe one or two others. We like gold, we like the yen, and we're kind of engaged in German bunds, all for slightly different reasons. But kind of if you put them all together, it's because they all give you that diversification benefit, but they've got different tailwinds behind them outside of the kind of diversification benefit.
Got your point. And gold, we understand. Talk to me about the yen trade. And it's unrelated, but it just a couple of weeks ago when there was huge panic around the Japanese market and the yen, that has completely faded away. But what's the thinking behind the liking in the yen?
So Japan is a significant capital exporter. What you usually see when you have equity markets kind of slowing down, typically you'll have that capital returning back to Japan. So you tend to have strength of the yen during slowdowns and weakness of the yen kind of when global growth is good and those carry trades are funded. That's the standard model every cycle. What we think is kind of additive to that this cycle is that the inflation trends in Japan, we think, are structural. So I think we've exited inflation, and that's because of the labor market dynamics and less so about, you know, the yen importing or exporting inflation. And because those structural trends have changed, we think, you know, over the next 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to continue to see the BOJ incrementally hiking rates. And that's potentially an environment where the rest of the world is cutting. And that helps the kind of interest rate differential. Plus, you have your standard like defensiveness of the currency. So that positions the yen quite well in terms of having a different driver besides just a risk or beneficiary.
Gotcha. The German bunds, I mean, is that just because with respect to Germany and Germans, I mean, they've been boringly fiscally disciplined forever and a day and haven't gone the route of either the US or China?
I think that's exactly it. So one is the fiscal prudence and discipline. And the other one is that the tendency that you have in kind of if you look at European bonds is that when Europe is struggling and growth is not great, which is when we want to have these diversifiers work, you will see a flight to safety within Europe, where Southern European spreads widen and everyone's selling Italian, Spanish, occasionally like French bonds, and German bunds tend to benefit from that. So you get this kind of double tailwind from one, the fiscal prudence is quite robust, so you don't have to worry about yields going up a lot. In risk off, they benefit from money flowing into Germany and away from the rest of Europe.
Gotcha. We'll leave it there. Zane Wilson, co-portfolio manager, Old Mutual Maximum Return Fund from Old Mutual Investment Group. Zane, appreciate the time.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Some thoughts for me on bull markets. This is a bull market locally and in the US and many other global markets. We've got higher highs. We're getting all-time highs. We're getting breadth improving. In other words, we're seeing it move away from, I don't know, the Mag 7 and locally the banks and the big retailers. There's been some significant buying action locally in some of our smaller stocks, Colgrove, CMH. I watch those because I hold them. But sort of classic bull market stuff. There's always reasons to be afraid. There's always fear-mongering telling us the end is nigh. You know, the market looks like it did in 1929 or 87 or 2000 or pick any other collapse you care to think about. But it goes back to, you know, keep an eye on that price action, and that is bullish. At some point, the bull market ends, right? At some point, the market falls. I don't know, 20%. 20%, 30%. We've seen 50% falls, but nobody knows when. Don't look at the high and think it's scary. Highs are intuitively bullish. Sit back, enjoy it. Don't try and time it, because if you hop out of the market in fear, it could run another 20%. And then when it falls back, well, it just comes back to these levels. It's a bull market. Enjoy it. It's making us money. That's it for today. I was chatting with Chantal Marx yesterday. Good results from Spur, although she did point out that costs had spiraled. We asked if you were holding any QSR stocks. Over half said no better options. Rest was split between doing great and being selective. I think the being selective means yes to Spur and no to Famous Brands. Chantal threw Famous Brands under the bus, justifiably, on their overly expensive UK gourmet burger. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nebuchle, Nicole Siren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. It's hard being an entrepreneur.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.